This is an ABC podcast.
Good morning. This is Pacific Beat on ABC Radio Australia. Today on the show, how a flight carrying $15 million worth of meth from Papua New Guinea to Australia has prompted authorities to do more.
This became an eye-opener. I think I'm going to step up the game a bit.
Also in PNG, pressure is on police to look into Golden Sun, an alleged scam targeting thousands of its citizens.
But unless and until someone comes to the police station and complains, then we would investigate.
We also take a closer look at the Hunters and Tigers rugby league game over the weekend. All that and more today on the show. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan. So glad to have your company. Starting in Papua New Guinea, there are mounting concerns that PNG's capital is becoming a hotspot for illegal drug trafficking due to how close it is to Australia. It comes after Australian police charged five men for allegedly organising a flight from PNG to Sydney carrying more than 500,000 doses of meth. PNG police have also questioned a Chinese national in relation to the crime. The ABC's Thierry Lapani spoke to Sam Basil Jr., the Member of Parliament for Morobe Province, and he says he'll be taking a closer look at flights in and out of his constituency.
I don't understand how they can arrange such flights to go there, because usually a pilot or the operator of that airline calls the owner of the airstrip and says, oh, I'm having a flight there. Coming there, and what kind of facilities do you have there? Can we refill there? What kind of fuel do you have there? And what kind of surface runway do you have there? Can we land there? How what's the distance of the runway? And do you have a terminal? Of, you know, all those kinds of services that the aerodrome provides, you have to get that information, and it will only come from someone who owns the airstrip. So my concern right now is, who are they in contact with before they go there?
You mentioned the airfield being run by a private business. Could you give us a description of the airfield that was used and what purposes does it normally serve?
It serves mining employees with charter aircrafts who go there and then pick the employees back and forth. Also, they do have direct flights from Australia to Bololo.
Are you satisfied police are doing enough to clamp down on such illegal activities in Bololo?
I can't blame the police. I just want the government to... the police can do their job. All we know is the police are capable of doing their job. It's just that we need to give them enough support from the best government of the day. We should give them logistic support, proper communication system like radios, and of course, a good office with electricity to do their job with a proper database so they keep record of all the things that are happening in the district. And as long as we have a database, I believe we can achieve so much more.
Yeah. So Bololo and the surrounding districts are known to be mountainous regions, and are you assessing, and is your district assessing, whether activities like this are taking advantage of Bololo's remoteness?
Yes, I'm actually building houses for the special forces, or 15. We call them 15. They'll be residing at a place called Bayun. You have the Bayun power station on top, and then those people up there, they gave a land for the police to build their houses, so which is something positive for me as a new member. We have to really separate the special forces from the regular police. In that way, we have they can maintain their professionalism and they can do their work independently.
Has this whole situation been a wake-up call for you as a local MP about how transnational criminals can operate within Papua New Guinean borders and in remote areas such as your district?
Yes, of course, it's a wake-up call. As a pilot, I also understand what it's like to fly aircrafts over vast oceans or over vast landmass to get to get to some place with minimum amount of fuel and the cargo, and given the weight and all that, it's pretty not hard but challenging. And you know, looking at Bulolo, it's a wake up call. And I was expecting something small like you know, marijuana and homebrew and all that. I was looking at that level, but now that this became an eye opener, I think I'm gonna step up the game a bit, try to pin those guys down. At the end of the day, the Bulolo people owns the land. We can't let out. We can't let outsiders come in and run the airstrips and run the aircrafts and try to get things under my leadership. I can't let outsiders come and run my district. You know, telling us, but like pretend that they really give us that input that we need. But on the other hand, they are doing something illegal. And I mean, at the end of the day, like I said, the Bulolo people owns the land, and we can't let them come and run our land like they own. So
that was Sam Basil, a junior member of parliament from Morobe province. He was speaking there with Thierry Lapani. And in Vanuatu, the government has announced a plan to allow 1,500 foreign workers into the country on free 12-month visas. It's hoped it will help plug a labour shortage brought about by local workers leaving for seasonal jobs in Australia and New Zealand. To find out more about the plan, we are joined today by Vanuatu's Minister of Finance and Economic Management, John Salong. Minister Salong, welcome to the show.
Good morning.
Good morning. Good morning. So out of all Pacific countries, I understand, Vanuatu actually sends the most number of workers to Australia and New Zealand. Now the plan is to bring foreign workers back into Vanuatu. I mean, is this creating, trying to use a different solution to address the real problem here, which is the workers leaving the country?
Yes, all the members of the Chamber of Commerce and Industries have been raising their voices for some time, saying that people who are trained in Vanuatu to be supervisors are leaving their work to opt for work in New Zealand and Australia. And so we've had an ongoing difficulty for some time.
I mean, Minister Salong, why not limit the workers coming to Australia and have them work in Vanuatu instead then?
Everybody in Vanuatu knows the constitutional rights. We have the freedom of movement. We have the freedom to be able to make decisions for ourselves as to what is best. And the minimum wages in Vanuatu are quite low. And so also some people find it easier to go to Australia and save money and come back and improve their lives, not just Australia, but New Zealand as well. And there's been a big number of workers leaving, especially in the last couple of years when we haven't had too much activity from the COVID lockdowns. So they are not coming back to where they were expected to be.
Let's go into details around this plan then, Minister Salong. Can you tell us how exactly will this work? Where will these 1,500 workers come from?
That's left to the Chamber of Commerce and Industries. Basically, what happened was because they have been raising concerns for some time, and some of them have been saying that they are able to find workers from overseas. So basically, we sent out a note to the Chamber of Commerce and Industries, and they came back with a number. They said they were going to be bringing 1,167 members, workers, I mean. So now we've capped it at 1,500. And so it will be left to the individual private businesses to find their workers. We can see the kind of breakdown that they are demanding. They're saying that 50% of the workers will be technical, 27% will be supervisor level, and 23% will be managerial level. So it's not exactly replacing laborers. It's a higher level of skills, I would say.
I mean, shouldn't those jobs go to local Vanuatu people, particularly if there are people looking for jobs, going overseas to get jobs? Shouldn't these jobs go to local New Vanuatu people?
Yes, yes. I mean, that's always been. We have a list where we make sure that certain jobs are protected for New Vanuatu. But in the past couple of years, basically, we have had difficulty in keeping people at their workplaces. They've opted to go to New Zealand and Australia, and they're not necessarily coming back and going back to their workplaces.
Do you think there should be some responsibility taken by these countries, by Australia and New Zealand, to make sure that they're not, you know, draining workers from Pacific countries like Vanuatu?
Like I said, well, we can set policy, but at the end of the day, every individual in Vanuatu knows their constitutional right, and that's where we're coming from.
And now you mentioned that it's up to the employers themselves to decide, you know, who they'll bring in, which countries they'll come from. What do you hope, Minister Solong? Where do you hope these workers to come from? Where do you believe that they might be sourced from?
We'll be monitoring them very closely. It's up to the market, and they are determining where the market is for potential workers to come in for work in Vanuatu. And so we're not going to be giving any preference per se, because it's only 12 months, special category visas, and we will issue them when they are demanding that the workers come in. And we will then monitor what happens in 12 months. And that will inform us of how we can move forward from there.
Okay. So what will happen after this 12-month period? I understand it's the free visas, so there's no fee around the visa?
Yes. Usually there is a cost in terms of work permits and residency permits. So after 12 months, we will, of course, the employers themselves will see how it's worked out with their employees. We will also monitor in terms of where the workers are coming from, in terms of what kind of work is really given to them. They have to be fitting those particular areas, which is managerial, supervisorial, and technical. And then once we have learned those lessons, we will map a way forward of how things adjust permanently. Because we were just coming out of the lockdown period, and then, of course, we got hit by two cyclones.
I mean, what impact has that had on the economy there, Minister Solong? Why are you looking at this this plan at the end of the day? What impact is it having on Vanuatu?
You mean in terms of workers?
Yeah, the you said there have been concerns from businesses. What specifically are those concerns?
Well, the businesses are having to rebuild their assets and be prepared to be open for business again, because most of the businesses around Port Vila are around tourism. And, you know, cruise ships started coming back in November. The border was open in July last year, but we still haven't recovered. There's been 2 years of no work.
And is it particularly the tourism industry that you hope this plan will help?
No, it's across every sector. It's according to the demands of the members of the Chamber of Commerce and Industries.
And I understand that the citizenship scheme in Vanuatu has also been a big financial gain for the country as well. That's been under review. What impact is that having on the local economy? Is that also being a challenge, particularly for government revenue?
Yes, yes. We just had the article for mission from the IMF last month, and essentially their messages were, one, we had to fix Air Vanuatu, two, we had to fix our labour issues, three, we had to do with the fact that the government revenues was forecasted to go lower because of the citizenship programme, and we had to look at how we're managing debt over the next few years. So Those are all concerns for us.
Yes, a big lot of work ahead of you, Minister Solong. We're talking about this plan to get 1,500 foreign workers into Vanuatu on this free 12-month visa. When will this all begin, Minister Solong? You said it was now. Yes.
Basically, we are working with the Chamber of Commerce and Industries. So as they begin to identify their workers, we will begin to get them to come in. It's not like everybody's coming in at the same time because it's not managed by the government. It's on the demand of the members of the Chamber of Commerce and Industry. So the interested members have already notified the chamber, and then we have to set up the parameters for the screening process when they come in, and also how we continue to monitor over time.
Okay, so still some months away.
It could be months away, yes. It could be weeks away.
Yes, okay. Well, Minister Solong, thank you so much for explaining this plan to us here on Pacific Beat.
Thank you, Brinaka. Have a good day.
Thank you. That was Vanuatu's Minister of Finance and Economic Management, John Solong, speaking about that plan from Vanuatu to allow 1,500 foreign workers into the country on free 12-month visas. You're listening to Pacific Beat this Monday morning. In Papua New Guinea, there are cases of police officers getting mixed up in illegal substances. One police officer in Port Moresby was recently fired after he was allegedly caught with meth. So why is this happening? Thekla Gunga takes a look.
32-year-old Lawrence Kambilapi was charged in February after a police surveillance team found meth in his hotel room. He is one of two police officers whose case is now before the Waigani Comital Court. The second officer, Joshua Yawija, confessed to consuming meth but denied involvement in its sale and distribution. 2 weeks ago, Mr. Kambilapi was dismissed from the police force. Head of the Special Police Operations, Donald Yamasombi, says while amendments have been made to the Controlled Substance Act, the penalties are still not tough enough.
We would like it to be rectified, and that is the penalty provisions of the Act. There are two categories to the drugs. One is plant-based, which includes marijuana, and the other is the synthetic. Unfortunately, the penalty provisions are not in favor of what we are doing with synthetics.
Port Moresby has been identified as a transit point for illicit drugs to overseas markets because of Papua New Guinea's geographic location in the Asia Pacific. This places enormous pressure on police to work extra hours as they try to track down criminals and disrupt the supply chain.
I think I have a small team that is committed to the job that they're doing, and that's why we are seeing results.
Director of Internal Investigations Unit, Superintendent Emil Apa, whose department deals with administrative matters, says illegal drug abuse by police officers occurs only in Port Moresby.
But then today, yes, we've got a good number of officers engaged in that. They're runners, in fact.
Police say there are three drug syndicates operating in Papua New Guinea with links to South America and European countries, and with well-established connections between suppliers and buyers, Yamasombi says teaming up with international agencies is one approach to tackle the problem.
With international collaboration, sharing of information is always very, very important. If our people are doing something with their people, we have to advise them accordingly. So they have to place surveillance and try to work around that. If we can disrupt the supply chain, that's very, very important.
That was head of the Special Police Operations, Donald Yamasombi, ending that report from Thekla Gunga.
Join me, Hilda Wayne, for Sisters Let's Talk. I'll be interviewing incredible guests and discussing issues that are in the hearts and minds of Pacific women.
I'd never been in the political scenario. I'd never voted until I voted for myself. But I made this crazy decision to stand, so I knew I had to work really, really hard.
So join me, Hilda Wayne, for Sisters Let's Talk. Wednesdays at 3:30 p.m. PNG time on ABC Radio Australia.
Now, Now it's that time of Pacific Beat where we head to Kyle Evans to find out what's making news around the region. Good morning, Kyle.
Good morning, Priyanka. Monday mornings, aren't they fun?
Yes, yes. We did have some technical difficulties here on the show, which you may or may not have noticed. Hopefully not. But things do seem to be settled at the moment. Yes, we'll just put it down to a case of Monday-itis, as is often the case with these things. Now let's head to Solomon Islands. Police there are cracking down on antisocial behaviour ahead of the Pacific Games. Why is that, and what exactly is antisocial behaviour, Kyle?
Yeah, it's a good question, but it appears it's a little bit on the rise at the moment in the streets of Honiara, and that's according to the city's police commissioner, who spoke to the Solomon Star about it. So he says an operation has actually been launched between law enforcement agencies to curb some of this behaviour, which, from what I can see, mainly involves things like petty crime, such as, you know, pickpocketing and you know, the stealing of mobile phones, and just general loitering around and things like that, which I suppose when you've got a big event such as the Pacific Games coming up, you want to put your best foot forward, showcase the best the country has to offer, and they want to get some of that behaviour off the streets.
Yeah, it's interesting. It might be one of those cases where there's more scrutiny placed, there's more of a spotlight placed on these, you know, as you said, antisocial behaviours in the lead up to such a big event like the Pacific Games. I wonder if there has actually been an uptick, or if it's just that police are taking a bit more notice about this, you know, these small crimes.
And they want people to know about it.
Exactly, that they are cracking down. And what's happening with the infrastructure there? I know our reporter on the ground, Chris Enrita Almanu Leong, has been giving us some updates around the, you know, big stadium that's been funded in part by the Chinese government and other infrastructure updates for the Pacific Games. Do you have anything for us?
Yeah, it's coming along very well. So the Pacific Games Council actually expects all Pacific Games venues in Honiara to be ready several months before the Games opens on November 19. So RNZ reported that one, and that infrastructure also includes the new international airport terminal out there, which I think encountered a couple of issues earlier on, or maybe late last year. So yeah, good news on that front as well.
Yeah, very, very interesting. Yes, we'll see what happens when that's all in action in November, I guess, for the Pacific Games. Now, this is a very interesting story. I sort of saw it reported a bit around the last few days. A Harvard physicist is planning an expedition to Papua New Guinea to find what he believes is an alien artifact that landed from space. Now, this sounds like an X-Files episode, Kyle. Is it actually real?
I know, cue the music. It is real, apparently. So Avi Loeb is the physicist's name. He is a professor out at Harvard, I believe. And he's organising a $1.5 million ocean exhibition to PNG to look for fragments of an object that crashed off the coast of Manus Island back in 2014. Now, this is reported by The Guardian. And according to the article, he noticed the object in 2019 and identified it as the first interstellar meteor ever discovered, meaning it originated outside of our solar system. And his team has also discovered that the meteor is tougher than all other meteors NASA has studied.
Yeah, very interesting stuff. This guy, Avi Loeb, that you said, I looked him up a bit online, and I know he's part of this, I think, Galileo project, if I'm not mistaken, that looks specifically at, you know, signs of extraterrestrial life, signs of alien life here on Earth. It's very interesting. What do you think, aliens exist, Kyle?
Oh, look, I've always been a big advocate that aliens exist. That's just me personally. I don't know. It just kind of makes sense to me. It's always, you know, I've never believed that we're alone out here in the universe, considering how vast it is. But that being said, you know, we've obviously never been able to prove it. But
yes,
it's certainly
true.
Fun to speculate on.
It is. It is. It's a bit sad to think that we're all alone here in this vast universe. Hopefully we have some friends out there. But yeah, I wonder why our friends would sort of hurl a meteorite near Papua New Guinea to get our attention. But that's what I guess Avi Loeb and his team is looking at. Do we know exactly where they'll be looking? Are they planning to go underwater?
Yeah, they are. It sounds like a bit of a needle in a haystack kind of situation. Mm. They'll be searching at a depth of 1.7 kilometres down on the ocean floor. They'll have everything from a sled. They'll have special magnets, lighting equipment, collection nets, even a mass spectrometer. I don't know what that is, but it sounds important. And if he finds anything, he's promised to send it all to the Museum of Modern Art in New York.
The Museum of Modern Art. I wasn't expecting that because I've actually heard that a lot of these medias have very valuable minerals in them that can be used to power things on Earth. And there have been thoughts about actually trying to mine our out of space to get those minerals here on Earth so that we're not mining into our environment and sort of destroying it. So, yeah, it's a shame that maybe it'll just be used as art, but maybe I wonder what Papua New Guinea thinks about that. But very, very interesting story, and I understand that you're actually trying to reach out to the scientist to see if he'll speak to us, and let's hope he does.
We'll see what happens.
Yes, and now to some sporting news. The Fijiana Ndrua have recorded a win in the first game of the Super W season. That's great news, great, great form. After last year's amazing run for the Fijiana.
Yeah, amazing. History-making win in their first game out in Nandi. It was a tense one, though. They won 12-7 over the ACT Brumbies at Prince Charles Park. New-look team in a lot of ways as well, with 8 debutants running out onto the field and 6 newcomers off the bench. And so they did sort of lack a little bit of cohesion at times, but still managed to get the job done, despite the Brumbies dominating a lot of that early field position. So, well done to them.
Yes, good work. And how about the rest of the lineup? Fiji men, the Ndrua's men side, and Moana Pacifica. How did they go?
Pretty sad state of affairs on that front, unfortunately. The Fiji men actually started pretty well. They were playing the Highlanders. They scored the first try, but then went on to concede 5 in a row and lost 57-24 in the end, while poor old Moana Pacifica, they fell 59-0 to the Hurricanes.
What a shame, but I guess, like usual, the women showing how it's done. The Fijiana Ndrua bringing it home for Pacific Rugby. So some good news and some bad news. And in fact, coming up on the show, we'll take a look at PNG Hunters, their homecoming game over the weekend against the Brisbane Tigers.
Thrilling homecoming game.
Yes. Can't wait to hear more about that. Very, very close one, right? Hunters didn't quite get across the line, but we'll hear just about why and what the rest of the season might have in store for them coming up on the show. And we'll also look at Golden Sun, that very strange pyramid scheme. We've been chatting about this here on Pacific Beat. We've got a response from the police in Papua New Guinea, and they'll talk about whether or not they'll be investigating this Golden Sun alleged scam there in Papua New Guinea. You're listening to Pacific Beat this Monday morning. Hope you're having a lovely morning and start to the week. You might have heard of the elaborate pyramid scheme called Golden Sun. We looked into it last week on Pacific Beat. It gained rapid popularity in Papua New Guinea, claiming users can review movies to earn money. The scheme appears to have collapsed, and the Golden Sun website has been taken down, leaving thousands wondering if they will ever see the money they hoped to make. While experts have labeled Golden Sun a scam, police aren't investigating the case. Reporter Marion Farr spoke to PNG's acting Deputy Police Commissioner, Donald Yamasombi, to find out why.
From social media platforms, from what we received, is I think they have been operating some kind of a movie kind of things that people deposit in. It's a pyramid scheme. Yeah, that's all I would know about this.
So are police investigating the scheme?
That's a good question. Like I say to other cases, the media platforms that people use is not a police station. For police to investigate any matter, it must be reported at a police station so that the processes and procedures that we apply there in terms of witness statements and necessary evidence that would afford that complaint to be legitimate so that the suspect can be processed to go before the court, processed properly. So at this stage, these are issues or matters only speculated on the social media. And unless and until an official complaint is lodged at a police station, I would be in a position to say, yes, there is a complaint and we are investigating.
So at this stage, you haven't received an official complaint about Golden Sun?
We have not received a complaint about Golden Sun. And yeah, that's right. No complaint has been lodged as far as I am concerned.
And who should lodge this complaint? Who might bring this to police so that they can investigate?
Well, in any case, if there is an aggrieved party, aggrieved by any means, and, you know, the best place to complain when you are aggrieved by an incident is to the police. So whoever may have complaints against whatever that Golden Sun or anyone is, should lodge a formal complaint. And like I said, the process that we deal with, we have to have that a witness statement or the complainant statement to afford us evidence to process a matter in the court of law. So unless a complaint is lodged, we have not received any. And police, as far as I'm concerned, are not investigating any case.
If someone was to lodge a complaint alleging that they have been sort of scammed or they've lost money through this scheme, is there any likelihood or any chance of them recovering the money that they lost?
That's a good question. Depending on the offences that we judge according to the circumstances and lay charges on, so we have cases like stealing by false pretense or stealing that goes through court, and it is the courts that make the decision. In most cases, the courts may come up with, punitive provisions to say, well, the offender can go to jail or refund to the complainant the sum owed to them. But with international scams, it's quite difficult sometimes.
That was my next question. I mean, PNG isn't a stranger to pyramid schemes. There's been quite large pyramid schemes like UVistract and Money Rain that have operated in PNG in the past. How difficult is it to investigate these sorts of schemes and track down the people who are kind of behind them?
It is quite difficult. Like I said, unless a complaint is lodged and you have to follow the money trail and the paper trail, trying to establish all that to hold those responsible to account, it is quite difficult. But unless a complaint is lodged, again, it would pave way for us to, you know, try probe and see where we can and how much or how far we can go.
Now, there have been some suggestions that this is actually an international scam and that PNG has reported it to Interpol. Is that correct?
If they have reported it to Interpol, I don't know which office they have gone to and who actually did report to Interpol. Because the Interpol is situated down here at the police headquarters, and that's where I sit.
So you have no knowledge of that anyway?
I've told you that, yes. I have no knowledge.
Yeah. As I said, they were unconfirmed reports. So we'll see what happens. But on your previous point, Deputy Commissioner, are you encouraging people who are victims or believe they're victims of this scam to come forward and report?
I am encouraging people. If you are aggrieved by any person that has defrauded you or have misguided you to investing in such scams, to come forward so that we could investigate. There has been also media publications by or awareness programs by the Central Bank of Papua New Guinea, advising the general public not to invest in pyramid schemes or money scams. But, you know, it's people's choice. But unless and until someone comes to the police station and complain, then we would investigate to see if there is substance for us to take appropriate actions.
That was Acting Deputy Police Commissioner Donald Yamasombi speaking there, urging victims of the Golden Sun scheme to come forward and lodge an official complaint with police. And the reporter there was Marion Farr. You're listening to Pacific Beat this Monday morning. I'm Priyanka Srinivasan. Now to sport, where fans were treated to a try-scoring festival in Papua New Guinea when the PNG Hunters homecoming Queensland Cup game happened on Saturday. The Hunters crossed 7 times in their return to Port Moresby, but it wasn't enough to defeat the Brisbane Tigers, who snatched a 38-36 victory. Goal kicking proved the difference in the match, with the Hunters only managing to convert on 4 occasions. For more on how the game played out, we are joined by assistant coach Paul Aiton from the PNG Hunters. Paul, welcome to the show.
Thank you. Thanks for having me, Priyanka.
Such a close match, 7-6 in the Hunters' favour, in your favour. What do you think went wrong?
I think, we've got a lot of young players, probably their first year. we had a lot of penalties too, the penalty count, so it probably didn't help. And they were rightful so, I'd say, looking back at the video. Just the ability to see that this, at this level that the, you know, you can't be offside so many times. I think we had two sent off as well, so we had two off for 10. Can't win games with 12 guys, so it's a bit unfortunate, but yeah, we had to learn that. But it was good to learn early.
Yes, that's true. And in fact, Paul, that is, I guess, what went wrong, the penalties and I guess, not converting some of those tries. But, you know, you did say it was a young squad. Many of them, I understand, are first-year players on the team. Have you also been quite happy seeing their performance? They've had not a bad season so far, right?
Yeah, really proud of them. I don't get too psyched up early, but just from what how they hold themselves in and around the team, you wouldn't think that, you know, quite a lot of the new guys was the first time overseas as well. So, yeah, it was really good to see. And it was really good to see how they're going, and just got to get them to maintain that. That's another thing at this level and or higher. You have to play that way every week. So, just got to keep them grounded, I guess.
Yes, that consistency can be quite a bit of a challenge. And as we mentioned, that goal kicking was also a bit of a challenge there. The second straight week, the Hunters have failed to win, despite winning on the try count. What do you think is happening there?
Yeah, I feel like the more get the games that are going this way, that remission just puts a little bit of nervous energy to the boys. 2 weeks in a row now. We lost the game last week. I wouldn't say we lost it because of the goal kicking, but there's a lot of things that happened to lead up to that. We shouldn't have been in that position. But I can assure you the boys have been working and were working on their kicking.
What was the concerns in the lead up? Is it just the training or, like you said, the nerves that need to be settled?
Oh, no, not really. I think after that particular game, since then, it's a lot of pressure to put on one of our young guys that had to kick it. And there's a lot of media and a lot of Facebook comments that have come along with it. So it's not a very pleasant thing to probably new that a lot of them have had to face, unfortunately. So that's not very nice. So they are definitely working on it, the kickers, and they're going to improve. So.
Yeah, Paul, I wanted to ask you about that because these are new talent. I mean, a big career hopefully ahead of them for a lot of these first years players with PNG Hunters. But is it challenging for that? I mean, the game is one side of things, but then there's all that scrutiny, all the hopes. I mean, PNG and rugby, it's such a massive game there. Is part of your role as assistant coach to also coach them on the sort of off-field side of things? So how to handle media, how to handle that extra scrutiny?
Yeah, definitely. It's a good question. It's a really big issue that I think we have here because a lot of people are on Facebook and social media, and a lot of them are very ruthless towards our players. Definitely in the past, but I think if you're new coming into it and not realizing this, you know, it can be all good 1 week, and then within the following week, you're the worst person. So a little bit unfortunate, and I guess there's another part of that. Not to be happy with just making the Hunters. We want them to come. Even though we're putting a lot of work, we want them to come, be a Hunter, and then want them to go forth and become better and go to better teams and higher levels. So we feel like we're just a stepping stone for them, and we don't want them to be complacent and, oh, I'm a Hunter now and that's it. We want, you know, even though we'd like to keep them all, but we can't. We want them to go forth, and then we'll bring in the next players.
I guess some of those promising first-year players is Murray. He's really stood out, scoring a hat-trick of tries on Saturday. And I believe he crossed in round two, and he was player of the match in round one. Yeah. Where has he come from? It must be very proud to see him shine like this.
Yeah, well, he got player of the year last year, the Digital Cup. So, it was a no-brainer to bring him into the Hunter squad, and he's a footy player, as far as I can see. How he carries himself, and as soon as he gets on the field, he has that footy brain on. So he's definitely a footy player, and I think we're going to see big things from Moreno.
Yeah, exciting to see where his season might go. And we reported earlier here on Pacific Beat that you had a few players in trial contracts with the NRL club, the Dolphins, in the off-season. Have you noticed any impact of that experience on the field?
Yeah, definitely. I think their presence as they came in, NRL preseason is amazing. They do a lot of things to the players. And our players in particular, I noticed when they came back, it was just their presence, their confidence. Just being around them, having them for the 2 years prior and having them now after that Dolphin pre. Yeah, it's a third season as well, but just their presence, I think, was huge. We had four go down to the Dolphins. One after the Dolphins picked up a contract in England, so he was shot to the London Broncos. I think he got men in the match their first game, his first game. And we've got three with us now, and they're available to be called whenever the Dolphins need them. So Dolphins haven't forgot about them. They're just with us in the time being.
Yeah, well, that sounds like a good program in place there. We've been talking about some of the nerves with this new team, with a lot of not new team I should say, but a lot of young players on the team. How do you expect the rest of the season to shape up, Paul?
Oh, I think I've got a good feeling about the season. It's been good so far. I think it's good to. I know it's interesting for me too. Learning a lot of things, being a player, moving into coaching. It's different, but yeah, I have a good feeling so far. Like the boys just work hard, and that's all we want. But we're our own worst enemy. a little bit from last year and the year before as well. We hurt ourselves a lot, so it's just understanding why and how that is and fixing that, and I think we'll be fine.
Yeah, well, all the best of luck, and let's hope. I guess this is also a signal to any listeners, any sports fan listening, to also lay off some of the boys online as well. Give them the space to learn the ropes, isn't it, Paul?
Yeah, definitely. It does hurt people. Oh yeah, leave them alone.
Yes, and impact the game, which is all important as well. So.
Yeah, that's true.
Paul, thank you so much for your time this morning on Pacific Beat.
Oh, thank you, Frank. Thanks for having me.
Thanks. That is Paul Ayton, assistant coach of the PNG Hunters, chatting to us about that great homecoming game over the weekend. And that brings us to the end of Pacific Beat for your Monday morning. But don't worry, we'll be back at same time, same place for the rest of the week from tomorrow onwards. And if you want to get more of Pacific Beat into your airwaves, we also run an afternoon show. Do stay tuned to ABC Radio Australia for that. News is next, and hope you have a lovely day.